Editha Klein Smith, Reel 3.
Well, as I mentioned before.
Wait a second, Editha, sorry. So if you just tell us about how the Jewish police were organized in the ghetto and their contact with your stepfather and uncle.
Well, we had, as I told you, a Jewish government. It was led by Adam Chernyakov, who was a very intelligent man. And it was sort of like a our ghetto proper government with the Jewish police. Of course, they wanted the as many people as possible that were intelligent and were accepted, because somehow the people that joined the police, certainly the first way, was sort of the riffraff more of a society. So they came many times, I remember, to our room to ask my stepfather or my uncle to join. But they wouldn't, even though we were hungry and we knew that was a better chance of simply of supplies. But we didn't do it. Then in the very beginning of the final solution of July 42, the Jewish police had to deliver 600 heads per policeman daily to the Umschlagplatz. So they had to catch people from all over. And it was terrible, because a Jew catching a Jew to deliver him to the trains. And it was a lot of, some dead, some even, there were cases that they had to hit someone or hurt someone, and it was really terrible. And Chernyakov, who was in charge, killed himself. He committed suicide right in the beginning of the final solution. He couldn't take the responsibility of sending police to get other Jews, and he killed himself, if I remember correctly, right in the beginning, in August 42.
Were there any rumors about what was happening to people who'd gone off selections, who'd disappeared on selections?
For quite a while, we didn't know about Treblinka. We knew that the transport were going east, and people still had hope that it was to some sort of a concentration camps, maybe even in more difficult conditions that we were in those factories in a ghetto. But you know, it couldn't. The human mind couldn't conceive that was the end. But in the fall of maybe October or early November 42, a man escaped from Treblinka and came to the ghetto and told the people about gas chambers and what's going on. And I remember that as children we would play, and from bits and pieces of cardboard or fabric we would try to recreate what the gas chamber, what it looked like. And but mainly we couldn't believe it. We couldn't believe that anything like that existed. And there was, you know, not a chance of escape anymore. And, you know, we knew that Korczak, with his orphanage, because he was taken right away in August, that with his few hundred children left and never was heard of. And but it's strange how a human mind works. You don't. It never, I must say, that with all the horror and all the years in hiding after and all the blackmails and so on, it never dawned on me that I will not survive. I just never thought about it.
Did your family ever talk about trying to get out, trying to escape?
From before the war or from the ghetto? From the ghetto we did. It was, for a family to do it, it was a very, very difficult thing. First of all, the men being circumcised, which is all in the world, most people are, but in Poland, just the Jews were. So it was right away an evidence, and people looked Semitic, or they didn't speak the right Polish, and so you had to go into hiding. To go into hiding for a family, you have to have a Polish Catholic family that would sacrifice, live through the danger of hiding a family, and take you in. And we just didn't know anyone that would take the four of us in. So, and our mentality was not to separate. And even as I mentioned before, the man offered me a chance and we wouldn't separate. So we did not. Until the very last, in 43, when already the ghetto was, the people were completely decimated. There were just a few thousand left out of 500,000. A lot of the few thousand were people that lived in bunkers, so-called, we call them wild, because they never had the card to go through the selections. They never went through any selections. They were hiding in bunkers, in basements, in behind the walls, in places like I described, that, you know, the walls would move and you hide behind. And so all those people felt that this is, you know, there are no chances, and there was talk about uprising, and they killed a couple of Jewish policemen who felt that they were collaborating more than they should have. And they told us that they will liquidate the Tebens himself and the management there in those slave camps came, and they told us that they will send us east, and that we are a very special group, that we are doing a great job for him, for the manufacturing, for whatever departments there were. And he's going to send us to a camp called Poniatów, and with excellent conditions, and we will work and live. And so we realized that this is really the beginning of the beginning of the end. And we tried to look for ways out. To get out of the ghetto, of course, there were sewers. And also, still to the last moment, there were working units, working commandos, that would leave the ghetto at when work began, at 6 or whatever in the morning, through the gate, escorted by the Germans and Jewish police and even Polish police, to work on the railway sorting out frozen potatoes or frozen beetroot, or in putting the rail trains, you know, working on jobs like that. And we did a trial run. You had to bribe all your life, everybody. And the Germans were bribed, and the Jewish police was bribed. And we left with such a commando and stayed all day sorting out the... One bribed the Jewish police and the Germans around, of course, and on one of those commandos that we were sorting out frozen beetroot and so on, we looked around and we looked for the best place that it would be to run away. And then mother contacted Polish people that we knew who were involved in very heavily in Polish underground, to help us, and especially to help her to get identity papers. And then when we finally decided on a date, we went with the commando again. We also realized the first time we went that a lot of Polish urchins, kids about 12, even younger, were following the Jewish command, the Jewish group, to see if anybody would run away from the group, and they will probably blackmail or beat them up or rob them, really. So we had quite a lot of small money, zlotys, in our pockets. And when we did the real thing, the real runaway, we were throwing the money on the street as we ran, and the children were picking up the money, and we were able to, you know, to turn the corner and to run away. So to get out of the ghetto was possible, but you needed immediately a place, an address where to go. You could not survive on the street for an hour. It was just impossible. They knew that people are running away from the ghetto. The Germans knew, the Polish police knew, the people knew. They blackmailed, they turn you in for it only. They got half, quarter of a liter of vodka. So a Jew life was really quarter of a liter of vodka. They turned you in, they got their vodka. And we did, my mother and I did run away. We had the address, and we stayed there. This, by that time, was the very end of March, 43. While there, my stepfather knew where we were, and it was so terrible in that hiding, because the man that lived there, I was already a girl of 13, and I was a big girl, and he sort of, you know, was pushing me and wanted to have sex with me, and I was trying to push him, you know, to push him off. It was awful. And the pressures were such that really, even though we knew that it was the end, that one wanted to go back into the ghetto, go back into the horror, to get out of the present horror. And also my stepfather came out once, and he repeated, he wanted to so much to believe it, he repeated the story that was told him in Tebens, in the shop, that the life will be wonderful for the people that will stay the last few thousand and will go east to that camp in Poniatów. In the meantime, my mother gave me several addresses, and I ran all over Warsaw trying to find anyone that would take him. And nobody wanted to, for not amount of money, wanted to take the chance to hide a Jew, to hide a man. And mother and I changed a hiding place again. By that time, April came, and of course the uprising started, and the ghetto was burning. Some people sounded sympathetic, you know, to stand there on the outside and looking at the, you know, walls burning and knowing that there are still sort of thousands of people there was a horror. But some just shrugged and commented, oh, stinks of garlic. Though I don't know why Jews think of garlic, you know. But it was not that much sympathy shown. And of course it became very difficult for the Jews that were hiding in Warsaw in the country, because people were coming through the sewers, and the Germans were much more alert to trying to, you know, to find people and shoot them. It was a horrible time.
Was your stepfather in the ghetto when it was liquidated? What happened to him?
What happened to us when the...
To your stepfather.
Oh, he was, as they said, they took the last few thousand and sent them to Poniatów, which is not far from, we went there, it's not far from Treblinka. And there were some Polish people that came to the fence, you know, to the fence that was surrounding the camp, and he actually gave them a note if they ever find us, and the people did find us, and the Polish people very kindly, and they were made to dig their own graves in middle of November, and there were just a few thousand left, and they shot them in November 43. So that was the remnant of the Tebans and the other camps. Maybe the ovens at the Treblinka didn't work anymore, but they shot them. They didn't take them to Treblinka.
I'm not going to take your story any further on.
Speak louder.
I'm not going to take your story any further on from there, Aditha. We will go back over a few things. But I would just like to ask you, after these horrific experiences that you went through, if you look back from today, how particularly have they shaped your outlook on life, do you think?
I think it made me very impatient with people that did not live through great tragedies and get sort of stuck on some problems or small petty things. I'm not very patient with people. it made me, I'm not a gardener, but I love flowers and colors and grass, because we were so deprived of it through the ghetto, that the children, we were to risk our lives and whatever to go to a corner of cemetery to see a tree or to see something green. We became a bit of a phobia. So that stayed with me. I think the sense of solidarity for every survivor, I think.
Did it make you write?
Sense of guilt. You push somebody to the front or somebody to the back through the selection. Should I have done it? I also had a terrible experience. I know it's past the story of trying to find a place, because we were blackmailed. It was spring of 44 in Warsaw, and I knew that of an address of a man that was an Austrian Jew. And he lived as a Volksdeutsch, he lived as a German. And again, I knew that this man had a sort of a complete fascination for me, and really a love for me. And I ran to that man at night with my mother to hide us. And a man was in his bed. And this man was still in the striped pyjamas from Auschwitz, from Auschwitz. And this man understood that my friend cannot hide three people, because nobody knew that anyone was in that room but him. And he got up. He gave him an overcoat. And he left. And we knew, we never saw him, we never heard from him. And I realized by walking in and by him having to leave the safety of that room, that he will probably not survive the next few hours, which I'm sure he didn't. But then I stayed. So all those things, I think, you live with, and they affect your life and your thinking. And I think most of the survivors live with a certain guilt. I survived. What have I done?
Did you tell your children about what happened to you?
Not in detail, no. And now when I talk to them, or something makes me think of a situation, I can talk about it, and I could talk to you about it. And I gave an interview before, but for years we didn't talk about it, not even with my mother to each other, no. So I think we needed sort of 30, 40 years of a distance to talk and to explain.
Why do you think it is important to pass on these experiences now, to record your story now for other people, for the younger generation?
Well, probably the basic feeling is of selfishness, that my story lives, that my family name is mentioned. And it is such a horrific part of history, probably all the survivors feel the same way, that it should be told, it should be passed on. If people will ever learn from that, I don't know. The human nature is strange. Feelings of anti-Semitism are almost bred in. I was completely shocked to read about the crosses outside of Auschwitz. There are practically no Jews left in Poland. I mean, why the such obvious provocation and heartache? But that's how it is.
If I could just come in here, Anita, could you describe how it was that you came to visit your grandmother's grave after the war, this is many, many years later, and how did that process take place?
Oh, the part that I came with my mother.
Yeah.
Well, we were liberated by the Russians on 18th of January 45. As all the war winters, it was an unbelievably cold winter. And we were in a little village about 20, 25 kilometers outside of Warsaw. And walked and walked and walked through the whole Warsaw, which was complete ruins, over the Ponton Bridge, which was the only way to get to Prague. But before we crossed that Ponton Bridge, we decided that really what we want to do is to go to a cemetery and find my grandmother's grave and tell her that we survived. And we walked into the cemetery. You couldn't really see the destructions of it, and what we realized later were dug out graves and big gaping holes because of the snow. The snow was just sort of, you know, covering everything up. But when we started walking, we fell several times into the open holes, which were obviously graves that were robbed. And as we came out of one, we noticed a bunch of about four or five young teenagers, and they noticed us as well. And they realized that because we are there, we are looking for a grave, we are Jewish. And they said, Jewesses, let's get them. And they started, of course, chasing us. And mother and I don't know at all what strength and what perseverance and falling many times into open graves and scrambling again until we managed to get to the main gate. And a street with with people out, and this was sort of in my mother's mind, there something clicked, and she said, "It's the whole town, actually." She says, "The whole Warsaw for me is a cemetery, and I want to get out."
You return many years later to see your grandmother's grave. What can you explain those circumstances?
Well, by that time I went with my husband, went by car, and we had a big white Jaguar, which was quite impressive. So we pulled to the front gate, and I remember as a child, when we came, that we always walked through the main alley in the cemetery. And the cemetery was terribly overgrown and neglected, and all the stones were down and broken and so on. Because it's one of the oldest and one of the most beautiful cemeteries, the Warsaw Jewish Cemetery. And we walked and we walked, and I was disoriented. I couldn't find. And a little man sort of walked over, and in Polish with a very Yiddish accent, said, "Well, are you looking for someone?" And I said, "Yes, my grandmother died in 37, and the name is Krzysławin, and if you find a grave, it is the only family of that name in Poland." And he said, "Well, everybody says that they're only ones." And obviously he had no records. He sort of kept everything on little bits of paper and so on. Anyway, we told him we are in Warsaw for 2 more days. And the following morning, he telephoned, and he found a grave, and he already cleaned it up a little bit. And the family bench that was next to the grave and everything with our name, of course, this was all gone. And stones and pieces of other graves were thrown around it, but the grave is there, and we keep it up. The man died, his son is there now, looks after it and plants little flowers for me, and so it's the only really grave that we have of all the people that in a family that were killed.
Would you like to take a leave?